From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
How do you build a carrot for organic farms and gardens? And how do you grow one for the best results? That's today's topic with longtime carrot breeder, Dr. Phil Simon, who'll share a little carrot history too, like who knew that the modern carrot's ancestors originated in Afghanistan? So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
Today's guest, Dr. Phil Simon, has been breeding carrots for more than 40 years. He holds a joint position with the USDA's Agricultural Research Service and the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Horticulture Department. More likely than not, you've eaten carrots with genetics that have come from Dr. Simon's breeding work. Welcome, Phil. I'm so glad to finally speak to you.
I'm glad to be speaking with you. Thank you.
So you're what's called a public plant breeder. Can you tell us what that is first off?
Right. So what that refers to is the differentiation between industry or seed company breeders and those of us that are working at universities, and in my case, USDA and the university. So that's what that refers to.
Yes. And University of Wisconsin-Madison has quite the roster of esteemed public plant breeders, many of whom I've spoken to over the years, who quite the set of colleagues.
it's a great place to work, and since my program is a USDA program, which has a national U.S. focus, it's important to be at a place where I can have colleagues to talk about business, as it were, on a regular basis, and this setting gives me that opportunity.
So the other day, in getting ready to speak to you, I watched a University of Wisconsin video maybe 10 years ago or something with you, where you said something like that more than 3/4 of the carrots in the U.S. have genetic background that comes from the Wisconsin breeding program or something like that. Tell me a little bit about the breadth of the impact that these 40 plus years of work have had on the carrots that we eat.
Sure. Well, like anything, almost anything in science, the success that I may have had is built on the shoulders of those that that were working on carrots before me, and so my predecessor had a very large program on breeding carrots for the U.S. market, and the focus of my program, as his was, is on fresh market carrots, which accounts for more than 80% of the U.S. market. What that means is carrots sold as raw carrots as opposed to canned or frozen or otherwise processed. There's no other public program working with a focus on fresh market carrots. So at least in part, the success of the program is the fact that seed companies have relatively few places to go to find new carrots being bred. So not to say they don't breed their own, and I don't mean to take anything away from their efforts, but and in recent decades, there's been a big push for a very focused breeding in the industry sector of vegetable breeding for carrots. The plant materials, the seeds that my predecessor and I had released over time, are widely used because they have been bred aiming for the market qualities that the fresh market industry in the U.S. looks for.
Okay. So taxonomically, what's a carrot? Because I think it's Daucus carota, I don't know, subspecies, that's sativus, correct, or something like that,
yep.
or Carota sativa, yep. I see, and oh my goodness, I get confused because it sounds a lot like Queen Anne's lace. What is
it? Right. You know, it's an interesting crop because, in fact, Queen Anne's lace is carrot. It's not. It's not just some distant relative. It's the same genus and species as carrot, which means that we can intercross cultivated carrots with that wild carrot relative that's very familiar along the roadsides over much of the U.S. and in many cases by the millions, you know, along the roadsides in the U.S. And so that's what—that's the genus and species of carrots. The wild carrots that we see as Queen Anne's lace in the U.S. are very common around the world in similar climates where there's enough moisture to sustain the initial growth of the crop, of, you know, the wild crop in this case, and not too hot, not too cold conditions. But carrot, wild carrots, a fairly heat tolerant and cold tolerant plant, and so it grows widely. And so, in fact, I've collected wild carrot in places like Turkey and Uzbekistan and Morocco and other parts of the world. It's a common wild crop.
So I said in the introduction, I had read on your website that carrots, one place they probably originated was Afghanistan, and you just mentioned some other places where there's wild carrot. And I guess we've been domesticating them since around 900 or 1000 AD or something like that. Yep. Can we just have like the super quick version of how that worked, the stages? Yeah.
Yeah, so there's not an extensive written history of carrot, but the first record of carrots being grown regularly as a root crop around 900 AD in Afghanistan or that larger area of Central Asia, but probably focused primarily in Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, Pakistan. Mm-hmm. Again, that's just based on written history, which again is very scant on carrots. And the first written history indicates that root crop was yellow or purple, not orange. Those first cultivated carrots were then reported, especially moving westwardly by people through Iran and into Turkey, into the Arabias, somewhat north into Greece, but probably more so a little bit south to North Africa, where carrot was grown as a root crop. And then it seems like the first cultivated root crop carrots came into Europe around 1300 from North Africa, have come from more directly through Greece and through Eastern Europe as well, but looks probably more like it came from North Africa, starting as a purple or orange carrot based on the written history. Then around 1400, the first record of orange carrots showing up in written history and in art show up in southern Europe, in Spain and Germany. And then they moved north and became very popular in the north because they're, you know, it's a nice crop for growing in northern Europe climates. And literally the rest is history.
Yeah. So in the years you've been breeding, kind of, there have probably been various goals along the way, landmarks genetically that you were seeking to improve. But now you're heading a project focused on breeding for organic growing. And so can you tell us why that's important? And I don't mean like politically, philosophically, like what people believe organic or not organic. I mean, practically speaking, it's very important in carrots because
practically speaking, it's been estimated that 2019, 16% of the U.S. carrot crop was grown under organic production management conditions. That's a large percentage. There are a few crops with that percentage of the total crop nationally being grown on with organic production techniques. So dollar-wise, it's a critically important crop. Some of the big growers are major suppliers of some of the chain stores that provide groceries. Target, for instance, would be one, Walmart's, where organic produce has become quite popular. And then there are many, many small-scale growers that provide carrots typically much more locally, but on a regular basis. It's a regular crop grown by very, very many of the small-scale community-supported agriculture-type growers, if your audience knows what that refers to, where you can get vegetables locally.
Right. And even growers who aren't farmers, you know, who aren't organic, in some areas, aren't they losing access to some chemicals and spray controls, you know, fumigants and spray controls that used to be, are almost essential for combating some of the opponents of carrots in the field? I mean, aren't those being gotten rid of, certain chemicals?
Indeed they are. They are, yes. And so whereas the organic industry is mandated to not use these chemicals, even the conventional growers are losing access to them. So, and certainly any conventional farmer would prefer to use less inputs if those inputs are fertilizers or water or pesticides. And so it's an economic issue for all carrot growers.
So one that probably brings us to those tiny little creatures that I think there's more of them on Earth than anybody else, the nematodes. Doesn't that bring us to them? Because that's one, is that a fumigant that is used to usually combat them, and they have such a destructive, a certain species of them has such a destructive impact on carrots, doesn't it?
Yes, and it takes some fairly potent chemicals to fumigate the ground before a carrot crop is grown if you're going to control nematodes on that ground. And those chemicals have a heavy environmental burden in the sense that they release organic volatile chemicals that go into the atmosphere and are hard on the atmosphere.
Right.
And so it's and not to say not to forget that these are also, the people that apply these are very well trained. But having said that, it's a dangerous product to be handling, and so it's better for everybody if they can be used less, and so we've been having a big focus on breeding carrots with nematode resistance for that reason.
Right, and so this is the Carrot Improvement for Organic Agriculture project that you are in charge of, and that you've received repeated grant funding for, I believe, and. That's one of the focal points is the nematode issue. And is also weed pressure another issue with carrots? Because for any home gardener, I would say that's one of the things that they don't like weeds.
Right. Well, carrots are generally poor competitors with the weeds that are their neighbors in a typical garden, be it your backyard garden or a few hundred acres in California or Washington or Wisconsin.
Right.
So they're poor weed competitors, and because they tend to grow relatively slowly. And so one of the focal points of the organic breeding project has been looking for carrots that both grow faster early and produce a larger top to compete better with the weeds around them, and so that's been an interesting part of the project. When you're breeding carrots, you're interested in diseases of the tops, but typically haven't paid that much attention to the size of the tops, and so it's brought our focus to trying to develop a crop actually that if you have a crop that's established quicker, that grows quicker as a seedling, it's going to be able to harvest quicker too. So that has some great advantages down the road for all growers as well.
So when we say the size of the top, do we mean like the width of the the orange or yellow or purple, the meat, so to speak, of the carrot, or the greens? Do you know what I mean?
We're talking about the leaves on top.
The top.
Yeah.
Okay. So the more
right.
foliage
Above
that
the ground.
It produces. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. I see. So yeah. It's interesting, and of course now that you say it, it makes total sense. Of course it can outcompete other things sprouting adjacent if it has more right. going on up there of its own. It makes more of a territory of its own. It stakes a claim, a bigger claim. Yeah.
And the big growers say that they sometimes, if they don't catch the weeds early enough with their mechanical operations and walkthrough with their help earlier in the season, it can cost up to $6,000 an acre just to pay for weed control. And that's a pretty steep price to pay.
Wow. So carrots, you know, when one tries to grow them at home, and I'm going to ask you in a minute for some of your advice on how we can do better as we approach eventually this spring in our gardens. But some of the issues, like what are some of the issues that the nematodes cause? Or I mean, for instance, like what causes some carrots to have like those hairy roots up and down the whole carrot or crooked? Well, crooked roots, I suppose, can be a mechanical problem as well. But some of the things we see, what's the cause and effect?
Yes. The nematode problem typically starts in the fibrous root system, but it typically will create some knobbiness, some bumps on the surface of the carrot. The effect of the nematodes is starts early in the season and just suppresses growth overall. But when that carrot does grow and there have been nematodes around, they're invariably going to be somewhat bumpy on the surface, and that makes them relatively unmarketable. Luckily, there's a lot of genetic variation we can tap into to eliminate them. But going to some of the other root defects, I guess I would say that you're talking about, there are various bacteria and fungi that cause lots of carrots. They typically are not very extensive. In the Midwest, there is an insect vectored primitive microbe of phytoplasm that causes this hairiness on roots in the Midwest and Eastern production areas. And so there are carrot diseases and pests of other types besides nematodes. Actually, the second most important beyond nematodes and maybe globally the most important is a leaf disease that causes the leaves to die back and suppresses growth overall, alternaria leaf blight. But anyway, so carrots do have a fair number of diseases that will attack them. But I would say compared to some of the, when I talk to other plant breeders, it's not as bad as what some plant breeders need to deal with. But we pay quite a bit of attention to diseases of carrots.
So I ordered carrots, my carrot seeds, and I'm ready to go if the weather cooperates in a couple months. So what would you say is you've grown a few carrots in your life.
A few, yes.
I bet you're pretty good at it. So in the backyard setting.
We generally get a crop when we aim for it, yes.
And we should say that for you, you grow them, they're biennial, so they don't make seed, which is your goal, is to get seed for the next generation, you know, improve your breeding, select from that, et cetera, et cetera. So you have a two-year process each time.
No, we handle it in a year. We can talk about that if you want.
You fake it, right?
We do get seed within a year of planting. When we plant the seed, we will have a seed from that plant within a year.
Oh, okay. You speed it up. But to grow carrots for dinner, how do you recommend that we can do the best? Because a lot of people have trouble with the sowing too thickly or, again, weed pressure, things like that. But how would you, what's your sort of quick 101 on this is what's important when growing carrots?
Yeah, most important is how deep have you cultivated your soil?
Okay.
If you've got great friable or soil, meaning soil you can break up easily, and you haven't dug more than a few inches deep, that's how long your carrots are going to be, because they will at least bend or fork when they hit that harder surface beneath the softer surface they've been growing in. If you haven't cultivated deeply enough, or if your soils just don't allow that, and that mandates the carrot cultivars or varieties are sold on the orange ones are sold primarily on the basis of shape. So there's about 15, 20 different shapes of carrots that carrot breeders over the centuries have come up with. And some of those shapes are quite short. I mean, the most extreme is what I call the Paris market or Paris forcing type. I mean, I call it that because that's what historically it's been called. But your listeners may know it by other names. But it's a carrot that typically is spherical and may only be 2, 3, 4 inches long. It's an early carrot, but also it's one that's great if your soil conditions are really poor. So for starters, to get a good carrot crop, you need to cultivate as deep as you want your carrots to be growing, unless you have really friable soil, like very sandy soil. Then it might not be so necessary, but even then, sand does form a hard pan if it's not been cultivated before you get in there and plant the crop. Beyond that, you want to make sure there's enough organic matter in the soil that helps to allow the roots to grow better. Rocks and sticks and even bits of, corn roots from the previous year can get in the way and cause carrot roots to take the path that leads them to be something other than a nice straight carrot or forked or something like that. So the soil preparation is most important critically. And many growers use raised beds. I think most of your listeners know what
right.
that means. But,
sure.
But, and so that helps too. So that I guess starting with that, you're pretty much ready to go on carrots. You plant them as early as you can. You don't want to plant them too early in climates like the Northeast or Midwest, where it's going to be cool, because if the temperatures are below something like 50 degrees Fahrenheit on a regular basis for a few days on a carrot that's getting to be thumb size or so in your garden, the plant will, instead of continuing to form that nice storage root that consumers like, will put its efforts into producing a seed crop. And when exposed to that extra cold, and
right.
That creates a carrot that's generally not able to be consumed because it gets very woody once that flowering process starts.
What
so
about
that's
spacing
another
this?
Consideration.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
So spacing this, just in the name of time for the next couple
yep.
minutes.
Sure.
So the
yep.
spacing, do I sew them to stand, so to speak, as far apart
yes.
as they should be eventually, or do I thin them, sow thickly and thin them?
I generally get the best performance if you have the luxury of being able to thin them, meaning that you have enough seed that you can sprinkle
right.
a little bit extra. I would typically recommend, depending on how large of a diameter you're growing, for some of the bigger diameter carrots, I would say maybe 30 plants. You want to aim for 30 plants per meter per yard, which isn't very many, but they really can benefit from that space. If you're growing a thinner and more narrow diameter carrot, you may be up to 100 plants within a meter. And so you will probably want to plant somewhat thick and then thin them. They benefit from not being, you know, an exactly straight line, but they're pretty good at working around each other. You know?
Right. And keep them moist until they germinate for sure, like any seed, but yeah.
Yeah.
And
crusting on that soil is really hard on that somewhat weak carrot seedling coming through. So once they emerge, you do want to get out there with if it's in your backyard, with a hose, let's say, and sprinkle them down. So that
right.
there's not a hard crust on that soil.
Right, right. So in the last minute or so, just is there like a color you're working on now or anything we're looking ahead
yeah,
to?
Yeah, we're working on lots of colors because, as I mentioned, the first carrots were purple and yellow, and orange is really the modern carrot of about the last 700 years. There are red carrots that were primarily developed in the East, and so we're looking at developing carrots for organic and conventional production with all of these different colors. Each of the different colors have some different nutritional aspects to them, so they're all good for you in one way or another, and that's something we talk about. But more perhaps immediately interesting is the diversity of color is really quite striking among
yes.
some of these different carrots. We started with carrots that were grown elsewhere in the world. So a lot of the purple carrots, for instance, started from a Turkish type of carrot that's widely grown, red carrots from the East. They were typically grown as carrots for processing, for cooking. So that creates some challenges in developing a carrot for fresh markets that are going to be eaten raw, because there hasn't been any emphasis on flavor for fresh market flavor for a carrot that's been grown for cooking. And so that's one of the challenges we have in moving these new colors, in new from the modern standpoint, colors into carrots for today's growers. So we need to work harder, and we are working harder on improving flavor, moving in that good flavor from the best orange carrots into these carrots of these what I call novel colors.
Well, Dr. Phil Simon from USDA and University of Wisconsin-Madison, I'm glad to talk to you, and I want to learn more, so I'm going to keep reading. I'm going to give lots of links for people to learn more about your work and about carrots and their history and so forth with the transcript of the show. And thank you so much for making the time today.
You're very welcome. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And thanks to all of you for listening too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify, and find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. Happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.